My name is Michael Robbins. I am 71 years old, and today's date is July 26, 2023. I'm in a StoryCorps visual recording booth, joining from Fresno, California. I'm here with my small one-step partner, Michael.
My name is Michael Ryan. I am 66 years old. The date is July 26, 2023. I'm in the StoryCorps virtual recording booth, joining from Fresno, California. I'm here with Mikey, my one-step conversation partner, one small steps conversation.
Okay. I'm a retired, no, this is you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's correct. I'm reading your bio, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm a retired gay man living in Central California. I previously lived in Michigan and Arizona. My career included hospice, nursing, and mission leader in Catholic healthcare. I have been in a committed relationship for 41 years, and I'm an avid needlepoint artist.
I am a 71-year-old male retired from 40-plus years in the marketing field. I am married and have one son, age 29, who is an accomplished musician. I tend to be somewhat middle of the road in my politics, but lend an extreme amount of importance to self responsibility in all aspects of life. Mikey, why did you want to this interview today?
Well, I'm fascinated with politics in general. I've never wanted to be a politician, but I do enjoy observing what's going on in our world and our nation. And I have an overall concern about how everything's so polarized, and I'd like to see that change. And doing things like this would certainly help towards that endeavor.
You want to ask me then, Mike?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, Michael. Why did you want to participate today?
My reasons are very similar to yours. I've also noticed how polarized our nation is, and I think that's reflected very clearly here in the Central Valley as well. It's a very deep concern to me, and I think that the name of the program, One Small Step, is very appropriate because I think this is one small step, and I would like to be part of that.
Great.
So that's what prompted me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying. I can't read this. Can you read the top one? How do you navigate? I can't. It's cut off.
What was your political upbringing like? What did it teach you?
My parents were conservative Republicans, but it was never really brought up. I mean, it was not something we ever talked about. It was not that we avoided it. It just wasn't part of my upbringing. I didn't really start to be aware of politics until probably when I was in college, 21. And that's probably when I registered to vote, somewhere in my early 20s. So it was never something we discussed at home growing up, other than I know they were politicians. I mean, politicians. We're conservative in their politics.
So my political upbringing was that my parents were strong Democrats, described themselves as very liberal as well. And I think that did influence me to a strong point. I know that I grew up with just the understanding that I would always go to college. And I think similarly, I was brought up with the idea that I would always be a Democrat. So, you know, I thought about registering, and when I was 21 and in college, I thought about registering as an independent, just to kind of keep my options open. But mm-hmm. I think that deep down, and you know, I think that, you know, being a Democrat was pretty much, I don't know if I'd say ingrained, but certainly influenced by my family.
Well,
all my sisters, my siblings are all Democrat as well.
Well, it's interesting in that where I was actually registered as a Republican for many years. And then last year I changed to independent.
Okay.
Because frankly, I am not happy with either side. Uh-huh. Yeah. And again, it's all comes to the back to the polarization. Yeah. But I you know, it's like my wife's mother was a staunch Democrat, and her whole philosophy was, if he's a Democrat or she's a Democrat, I'm voting for him, regardless of the issues involved.
Yeah.
And it's strictly party line. And I don't see things that way. I see things in shades of gray. And it's not, some of my ideas are conservative, some are liberal, and everywhere in between.
That's interesting that you say that, because my I am that way as well. I'm like, you know, it's Democrat all the way when I'm voting. So I kind of relate to what you're saying about your mom or your mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law, yeah. Well, yeah. Parents are the, except my parents are the same way, except on the conservative side, where it's Republican all the way, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, interesting.
So let's see, can we talk about, have I ever felt excluded, or have you ever felt excluded by your party?
I think that one of the things.
No, I'm sorry. It says by a political party, not necessarily yours. Okay. Sorry.
Yes, absolutely. I am excluded by a political party right now. You know, being a gay man in America right now is very frightening. You know, because we're just such a target for, you know, the MAGA Republicans. I don't know if all of a Republican feels that way, but.
Did you say moderate?
MAGA.
Omega or MAGA.
Yeah.
Omega.
I got MAGA Republicans, yeah.
Yeah.
And for some reason, there has been this shift towards, you know, all these social kinds of issues where they're, you know, calling, you know, drag queens predators, and, you know, they're making trans people illegal. And I have a trans great nephew, and they're trying. And now recently the Supreme Court said that, you know, people could discriminate against me because of if they have a religious belief against that. So I feel very, very targeted. I feel very unsafe. And I, you know, have thought about leaving the country numerous times because of that. So, I feel that I am absolutely a target for profound and lawful discrimination by the Republican Party. And I don't see that. I mean, I know that certainly Bill Clinton, when, you know, he promised us that he would, you know, end the discrimination of gays in the military, you know, that was a tremendous betrayal when he didn't do that. And did Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So I, you know, my own party has been that way as well. But right now, it's definitely, for some reason, there is these social attacks that I really feel that me and my family are right in the middle of.
Well, you know, this thing is, this whole gay, trans, pedophile, all those different issues that are floating around. From my perspective, now keeping in mind that I have several friends who are gay and have been for many, many years. I've known them. And in fact, in my fraternity in college, probably five of my fraternity brothers are gay. Oh. And I've retained my friendships today. Uh-huh. And now from my perspective, I think a traditional gay folks, if you want to call it that, have pretty much compared to it was 20, 30 years ago, are far more accepted. But what I find interesting is now you have this whole drag, like you brought up drag queen thing, and then you got the trans thing, like the Bud Light guy, and you've got all these different components to this whole world, many of whom are in total conflict. And I know there's gays against pedophiles, and there's gays against different things, you know, and to a great extent, traditional gay folks, and again, my opinion, are getting lumped in with all these other folks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's not right. But at the same time, it's so convoluted. It's hard to keep track of who's on first and who's on second. Now, I would like to know if you agree that, just one example of many, teaching kindergartners or second or third graders about sexual issues in terms of what's the word I'm looking for? Gender and things of that nature. Do you feel that's appropriate at those young ages? Gender stuff.
I don't think teaching sexuality, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual, is appropriate at that age at all. I think where it comes to be, where it can be an issue, is if one of those children has two same-sex parents. And so, children may question that. And I think that there are ways of answering that question. And I think that the concerns that, you know, we have right now is that, you know, in when we have those school kinds of regulations and whatnot about not teaching it, then I'm wondering what kind of message it sends to those children with same-sex parents.
Oh, like there's something wrong with it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, because like what you're saying is if it's like a school event and a particular kid has two dads or two moms, then naturally you're right. Naturally, the other kids are, oh, that's interesting. Right, right. Mommy's got two dads or whatever. Yeah, which one? Oh, that's great. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And you're right. You have to be able to broach that in a way that make them understand. Yeah, it's a tough, I'll tell you.
But see, that's not necessarily about sexuality. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
That's more about that relationship. And I think that's what is, you know, and it can be, you know, kids don't need a real, you know, extensive, you know, explanation of what's going on. You know what I'm saying? So,
we're probably over thinking it with them maybe, right, or over exposing them. Maybe just, you're right. Go ahead.
I'm not sure when it is appropriate to teach sexuality. I mean, I got it when I was in high school in a health class.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And homosexuality was not discussed at all. I don't think that that's the case. Other than my concern about what message it sends to the kids that have same.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
How about you felt, you know, alienated from a political party on your end?
Not really.
No?
Okay. Not that I can think. I mean, I may have, but like I said, I'm kind of right in the middle. I mean, now I'm independent, which really makes me down the middle, I guess. But I've never really felt that, again, because I see both sides. And I try to, like with everything in life, I try to put myself in somebody else's shoes. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm one of my greatest strengths is empathy. I try to have empathy for people in their situation, so I can't assume that where I'm coming from is exactly where they're coming from, you know, and they may have a whole different scenario. It's even like a clinical depression, for example, for many, many years, and I think this is true of a lot of people. People think, you know, when you say, oh, this person has suffering from depression. Well, get it together. Come on. Cheer up, you know.
Get over it.
Yeah. Get over it. You know, everybody has a bummer. You know, everybody has a bad day. You know, have a beer and go for it. You know, that's not what it is. It's not like you're depressed. You know, I'm bummed out because that movie's no longer on TV. You know, it's just clinical depression is it's a chemical and a whole other thing, you know.
Yeah.
And if people don't, I think people, more and more people with, you know, the stigma with mental health, it's changing. Ironic, you know, interestingly enough, it's almost become trendy to say, well, I have a therapist, you know, you know, that's the thing to do now. Where was I? I'm getting off track, but I don't know if as far as being alienated from my party, not really.
Okay. I'm interested in this question, if you're okay with it.
Have you felt
patriotic or unpatriotic? What does it mean to be patriotic to you?
Oh, I think what it means to be patriotic, I didn't even see that in there.
Yeah, I didn't see yours either.
See my what?
The question you asked about feeling alienated from a party or?
Yeah, it's right here. Unless you have different questions to me. Can you talk about a time you felt excluded by a political party?
I don't see that one.
Wow, that's weird. Anyway, I
see it now, Mikey. I see it. Okay. Yeah.
What do I feel is patriotic? Yeah. I think, well, I'll tell you, To me, and it's hard sometimes too, because you see the way government's running and you get really frustrated. Of course, never to the point where I would be like some people that say, I'm moving or I'm going to a different country. And there may be some nice countries. You may want to go to Australia or England or wherever. But the point is, I still think this is the best country in the world and has a lot of faults, but who doesn't? And I always try to keep in mind the freedoms that we have. I mean, just being able to go for a ride in my Harley without being stopped at a gate or whatever. I can just do whatever I want as long as I pay my taxes and get my license and do everything by the book, you know, do follow normal procedures. I should have that freedom to come and go as I want. I can vote, which I do. And I know a lot of people, contemporaries of mine, who, a couple of things. One, they won't watch the news. And I like to consider myself very informed. I'm a news hound. I love the news. And another thing I do is, if you're talking news, I look at both sides. On one hand, it's CNBC, and the other hand, it's Fox. But now, we're going off on a tangent. What I find interesting is what's happening at Fox. They used to be considered conservative, right? And very right wing. And now with all the changes they're going through, I heard the other day that they have a matching of funding. So for any employee that wants to donate to different causes, they'll match the funds and they have a list of ones they do. Well, it just came out a few days ago that they were support funding the Satan Church, but they won't fund a Christian like a, I can't remember the guy's name. He's a big time Christian leader. But yeah. I mean, how can that be? Now, yeah. One thing my son, Charlie, who's 29, always reminds me is, Dad, don't believe everything you see or hear, which I got to get better at that because I'll see things and I won't believe it. But yeah, they're again, getting off on a tangent. Where were we?
Patriotic.
So I'm patriotic to the extent that I support my country. I believe in my country. I appreciate my country and I vote and I volunteer for different things on occasion, but you know, that's my level of it. How about you? What?
I think that what we're doing right now is really an act of patriotism because we've both kind of commented that, you know, we're concerned about, you know, the divisions in our country and in our area, the Central Valley. So, you know, I think the fact that we're stepping up and saying, you know, we want to be part of fixing this is kind of an act of patriotism.
Sure but, is.
You know, I think I am. I mean, I absolutely have a profound belief in the Constitution of the United States. And I believe that it is a wonderful bedrock. And I wonder sometimes if, you know, does there need to be adjustments or, you know, whatnot. So, but, you know, I have a concern, I have to admit, about, you know, when I see the flag in front of people's houses now. That has a very different meaning to me than it did before, because in my personal opinion, I think that they've substituted their old Trump flags with American flags. And so
I'm trying to think, was there a Trump flag?
Oh yeah, there were huge. It's in my neighborhood, like every other house had Trump banners.
Oh, it just says Trump.
Yep. And it comes down the front. I mean, some of them are like 6 feet tall, or they're across their garage doors or whatnot. So they replaced that with, you know, the American flag and that
is too bad, you know, yeah. And I'll tell you one thing that brings me to the, and I don't want to usurp you, but I see where you're going with that because I was telling you earlier that I'm kind of right down the road and I'm frankly disgusted with both sides. I mean, Biden, God bless him. I think he's a good guy, but I mean, the poor guy, it's like he's being propped up, you know? I mean, I think we agree. Why would he want to run again? It's kind of sad, you know? Yeah. Now, but on the other hand, you got Trump, who he's an egomaniacal nutcase, you know? And I voted for him the first time. And the reason I voted for him the first time before everything came about is I wanted to shake things up, and he did shake things up because I was tired of the status quo in the world of, you know, career of politicians. But now, after what's happened with his tenure and after his tenure, I mean, the guy's a nutcase. And so what amazes me is his, where he is in the polls, currently in the polls. He's so far ahead of anybody else. DeSantis is the next one, and he's way behind him. And then all the other guys are 10, 5 points, whatever. And it just blows. It scares me.
It is scary.
That he's so popular.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know what he unleashed. I'm trying to figure out what it was. What is this profound commitment that those Americans have to that man? I don't know what.
And how they can say it with a straight face. And you have some other politicians who I otherwise like. And primarily maybe Republicans, but how they can say it with a straight face, how they can offer so much support with a straight face as if this guy walks on water, you know, and it's, I'm thinking, what, are you kidding me? You know, and you know, what's really sad is there are probably a lot of I know there are some very qualified people on either side who could run for president and make a great president.
I agree.
They're too smart. They know better. They're not going to open. They don't want that job.
Yeah.
You know, and they could do much better in the private sector.
I think that brings to it another concern that I have is that, you know, I'll say this is that primarily I am concerned, so concerned that Republicans, you know, really allow him to dictate what, you know, their votes are and whatnot. Now they have a tremendous sense of solidarity with that man. But I feel like they're not looking at what is good for the country, even from a Republican perspective. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're not looking at what's right for the good for the country. They're looking at what will make him happy. What will keep him from, you know, tweeting something nasty about them? What will help them keep their seats? It's all about them. It's not about, our Congress is no longer looking at our country. They're in it for themselves and making sure that somehow he's happy.
And they stay on his side or he on
theirs. Exactly. You know, there is these consistent votes and, you know, so I have, that's just a real deep concern that I have too, as far as, you know, as Trump is concerned. So there's this, you know, as you pointed out, there is this incredible, you know, number of people that he's so high in the polls and stuff. And yeah,
I keep thinking it's a dream or a nightmare. I mean, how could he possibly be that? He's like at 60%, and DeSantis is probably 30, if that. I don't know. It's that kind of disparity, and it just blows me away.
Well, yeah, I'm with you though. I you know, I was glad to see Biden win, but I think it's time for him to step aside, you know, and see what else there is to this. But according to, you know, the polls that I'm reading, he would, he's the only one that can beat Trump at this point. So,
that in itself blows me away too, just as much
exactly.
Trump. So, and then you add to that the cocaine and everything else with his son, not that it was his son's, but it probably was, but who knows. But just like today, did you see what happened today where his son, what's his name? I forgot his name.
Yeah.
His son went to court to get final resolution on his plea bargaining on the gun charges and on the non-payment of taxes charges and all that. And the judge took one look at it and said, no, you can't do this. You can't get a plea bargain. So she shut him down. Now they're going to have to go back. But if it happened to you and I, if we were had a gun illegally or didn't pay our hundreds of thousands in taxes, we'd be in jail.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And it's just double standards all the way. So I don't know. But then I'm sure Trump hasn't paid taxes either. You know, I mean, it goes both ways. And that's why sometimes it's hard not to get a little disenchanted with things, but that's the way it is.
So looking at these other questions, Mikey, can you tell me about someone who has been kindest to you in your life?
Oh, like growing up or afterwards? Like
your choice.
Man. Well, Boy, that is a good question. I mean, people have always, I mean, in a very general sense, have been kind to me. I've been very fortunate to be around good friends, good family, good people.
Well, I have one if you, you know.
Yeah, you please.
So when I went into high school, I lost a lot of the friends I had from grade school. And so I was kind of alone. And that was because, you know, they bullied me and, you know, thought, you know, because I was a sissy or what have you. And so I was kind of alone.
When did you come out?
I came out in college, actually.
Oh, okay.
I came out at age 21 or 22.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I was an effeminate kid or what, but, you know, they let's say I was. So anyway, for that, you know, which was discouraging because I had been with these kids, some of them since I was in second grade, you know. But there was a teacher there who and my brother died that freshman year in high school. And this teacher, who was an English teacher, Mrs. Trujillo, knew him, had been with him. And so she
is older brother,
Yeah, 3 years older.
Okay.
And so she kind of took me on by my side and kind of, you know, was a mentor to me and was like, you know, you don't necessarily have to go that route. You know, here's what I see in you that I think would be, you know, that you would find fulfilling and fun, you know. And so I kind of let go of those old friends and, you know, went into you like student government and leadership and that sort of thing. And so she had a real profound influence, and it was really through her kindness and her ability to help guide me that, you know, I really kind of felt like I had found a way there. So
nice.
Yeah. And it was very meaningful. She had a tragic ending to her life. But you know, she made an impact. So,
well, I'm sorry to hear that, but, well, she was what? Your what teacher?
She was an English teacher, at a high school English teacher, yeah.
You know, I don't know why it made me think of this, but you know how a lot of times when you apply for credit or you apply for different things and it asks for secrecy questions or, you know, like questions to ask you to see if you, you know. Security questions, that's what I'm looking for. And it'll say, what was your first grade teacher's name or your third grade counselor's name or whatever. Like, I have no idea, but you obviously remembered her because she made such an impact in your life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I would never be able to remember any of that.
Yeah.
It says, how does your, well, I don't know if we covered this, earliest memory of politics, did we cover that yet?
Yeah, I think we did with our, parents. Did.
How does faith or religion guide your political values? That's a good one.
Mm. You want to go first or?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Okay.
That I can consider, that I really am aware of. I just believe be fair and honest and ethical in everything you do with other people. You know, what comes around goes around, karma, you know, that story. And, you know, I'm not a deeply religious guy. I consider myself a Christian and I do pray. And it always seems to come true. It's amazing how that works. And, I'm very skeptical of most formal religions. You know, that's an interesting thing because you're Catholic, obviously.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I always thought Catholicism was a mainstream religion. That was in it worldwide. You got Rome and everybody, you know, and I guess it's not. I had no idea that people have a problem with it, that there's a lot of angst against Catholics, and that Kennedy, it was a problem for him almost getting re-election because he was a Catholic.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Always said everybody loves Catholics. You got the friendly, you got the friendly priest and the nice nuns and, what's the not like, you know? But then, okay, then get me started on this. I don't understand anti-Semitism.
No, I don't.
I mean, what's wrong? I mean, sure, there's some good Jews and bad Jews like there is everybody else.
I don't know where that comes from.
You know, and there, I guess the hysteria is, oh, they're controlling everything. They're controlling the money, and they're cheap, and they negotiate everything. I mean, I don't know, you could say that about anybody.
Absolutely. You know? I'm like going, okay, so they're smart, you know. Or, you know, but I don't even know that you can say that because they're Jewish. It's just the individual, you know, was, you know, so it's like these are attributed to their because they're Jews that they, you know, have these qualities. And I don't think that's necessarily fair, you know, any more than if they attribute those things because I'm gay or whatnot. I was raised Catholic. And then, and I'm with you, it really doesn't influence me too much, but I have a strong background in Catholicism, as you pointed out. And right. I, at 18, so I went to a public school, so I had to take religious classes on Saturdays, which I resented thoroughly. And then at 18, I left the church and went exploring for, you know, other, because I recognized that there was something spiritual in me that was not being fulfilled. And so I went searching for other areas and whatnot, but I think it was just so ingrained in me that I was a Catholic that I finally just embraced it again. And so I, to make a long story short, I got my master's degree in Catholic theology, and I became a mission leader in Catholic healthcare. And what that is those are roles that were held by nuns back in the day. But because women weren't going into religious life and because they were dying, they started preparing those of us who are what we call lay Catholics, non-ordained Catholics.
Well, the same thing is with men going into the priesthood, too. Right. That was dropped off.
Yep. So I went and did that, and I had a great, and it was a wonderful experience studying theology. And it really resonated with me. And then I worked at several Catholic healthcare things and really appreciated it. And as you can see from the crosses and crucifixes, I also have.
Yes, I picked up on that.
Yeah. It's kind of hard not to, huh? So, you know, so I love theological art too, but you know what happened? So I loved Catholic healthcare, but I could no longer tolerate the Catholic Church. And I think that so when I ended my career, I left the church.
Right.
And, you know, it was there was always this single, you know, so for so many elections, there was always this single issue, single focus issue on abortion, you know, from the Catholic Church. And
oh, yeah.
So, you know, and there were so many other things that, you know, they could, you know, have focused on that really, you know, including care of the poor and, you know, solidarity with unions, et cetera, that really could have been. Could have also used some focus or some attention during the elections. But what happened was I read a book called Out of the Closets or In the Closet of the Vatican, Homosexuality in the, you know, in the papacy. And it was just exposed all of these different cardinals and bishops and whatnot that were gay, had boys living with them. So they were violating numerous, you know, their numerous vows of celibacy. They interviewed prostitutes in Rome about it, you know, but yet they would come out against these very, very dramatic, you know, statements against gay people, you know, and, you know, that, you know, we were going to hell, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I went, you know, that and with the, you know, the huge scandal with, you know, the abuse and the violations, I was like, okay, I'm done. You know, I can't support this anymore. So I love Catholic healthcare, but the church is not for me. So.
Well, I formal religion, I'm not for that either. My wife is always saying her church is in her heart, you know, and to an extent that's true. Well, you're going to love this. Guess what? My background is Mormon.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not, trust me, I'm not practicing. And what's interesting is, growing up, I mentioned to you, my dad was an orthopedic surgeon. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad were from Salt Lake City, which is a bastion of Mormonism. And he went to the University of Utah and then graduated. And then he got his medical training at Northwestern in Chicago, or Evanston, actually. And then transferred out here. And then he did his internship at UC San Francisco. And after that, he's opened up shop in Santa Rosa, where I was born and raised. So growing up, we used to go to church on Sundays to the Mormon church, and I hated it. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell you why, except it just looked different, felt different, smelled different. And if you didn't make it, it was like, if you weren't there last Sunday, it's like, where were you last Sunday, Brother Robbins? And terminology, it just didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And so then when I turned 12 or 13, in that church is when you get baptized. So Mom made me get baptized. Mm-hmm. Even though we really didn't go that often and weren't really practicing, but she wanted me to do it. And I said, Mom, why are you making me do this? I hate it. Because, well, just in case there's something to it. So in other words, well, I'm not really sure this is real or that it's going to make any difference, but just in case, I want an insurance policy to be able to say you got baptized. So, and then when you couldn't, they, you know, no smoking, no drinking, which makes sense, and no coffee with caffeine. And then I knew a guy, in my marketing career, I handled one thing I was going to mention to you. I handled many hospitals. I did work for St. Agnes. I did work for community.
Is that right?
Yeah, community, St. Agnes, Hanford community, San Joaquin community in Bakersfield, et cetera, et cetera. Did a lot of healthcare related stuff. And now I got off on a tangent. I forgot what my thought was. Shoot.
Hey, is there still a hospital in Hanford?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's a Seventh-day Adventist hospital.
Oh, okay. I know where it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, oh God, I'm sorry. I forgot.
Well, that's okay. Can I ask you, did you do a mission?
No, I did not. That's usually when you are, after you graduate from high school and go, I guess maybe between high school and college somewhere. No, I did not. I was kind of, I didn't participate. I did get the baptism, you know, I'm going to change 180 degrees, but talking about Jewish folks.
Yeah.
Growing up, I didn't really know much about them. I didn't really hear about them that much. And so my sister, Sandy, who was about 5 years ahead of me, she went to UC Davis. And in her last year, she would come home and visit. And many times she'd bring boyfriends with her. And they were the typical blonde-eyed, blue-haired, blue-eyed, blonde-haired Tab Hunter types, if you know what I mean. Uh-huh. Typical preppy, fresh, you know, kind of guy.
Yeah.
And then she'd bring him to dinner on Thanksgiving or whatever. And then one year my mom says, well, Sam, she sat me down for a chat. And she goes, well, I just want to let you know that Sandy's going to be coming to Thanksgiving dinner this year here in a few days. And she's bringing a new friend. His name is Paul. Now, Paul's a little different from the boys you've met in the past because Paul is what we call Jewish. Mm-hmm. And she started to describe. Of course, I didn't really know what was going on here. Yeah. He's a very nice man, but you'll find him a little bit different. Plus, one of the differences was he was like 20 years her elder. Mm-hmm. Okay. He was a microbiologist, PhD at Sonoma State. Mm-hmm. And they ended up getting married. And the interesting is they had a wonderful marriage that lasted forever until his death about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And but for her to have to sit me down and explain to me that, well, he's Jewish and he's different than the other boys you've met. He looks different. He sounds different. He talks different. But he was the greatest guy you'd ever want to meet. Loved him. He was fantastic. Yeah. But the fact that she felt the need to tell me that, I would have probably never even noticed him one way or the other.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Interesting. So, do you and your wife share similar political views?
I tend to be, well, as I said, my leaning is liberal. My leaning is conservative. Hers is liberal.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So
how do you guys navigate that?
It's not a problem. Well, I'll tell you one thing. She'll probably get mad at me for telling you this. I told you I'm an avid voter. She won't vote.
Oh, is that right?
She insists on that. She goes, it won't do any good. You know, the attitude.
Yeah.
What difference does my vote make? Maybe to some degree, maybe. But I'm thinking if everybody thinks that way, then nothing will get done and nothing good will happen. Yeah. And I can look myself in the mirror and say, you know, I did my best. I voted. And I love, I got to be honest with you, I love going to the polling place and you know, stating my name and address. And I like to, you know, go through the process. It's fun. You know, it's I like it. I'm proud to do it.
Have you ever volunteered at an election?
You mean like a being a polling person?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't, but I think I might, because of course now they're eliminating them with the mail-in ballots, right? Aren't they? Well, they can't get volunteers. That's the problem. They can't staff these folks or staff the folks.
I did it one election. I did it.
And you like it?
Well, you know, I was a guard. And so at the end, so I would have to keep
your guard. Were you armed?
And but what happened was I had to kind of keep an eye on, you know, who was coming in and out, and did they vote once, and you know, whatnot. And it was so profoundly boring, I wouldn't go back. You know, they asked me to go, you know, the next year, and I said, if you give me a different job,
how many hours was it?
I think it was just four, maybe five.
Standing on your feet, though.
No, just sitting there on a stool.
Oh, okay.
You know, watching, and I mean, nothing happened. And so it was, you know, and like I said, they called me to do it the following election, and I said, if you put me down as, you know, doing registration or, you know, something beside that, I will. But you know, they wanted guys to do the security, and so, you know, and I said, well, you know, when I was doing it, I said, well, what do I do if I see something like that happen?
What is he supposed to watch for?
Well, again, it was like making sure that somebody wasn't going back and voting twice, and you know, that there wasn't any kind of
shenanigans.
Shenanigans or you know, any kind of fighting going on or whatnot, or and that people were respecting the space, you know, whatever number of feet it is you have to be out before you can solicit and stuff like that. So
right. Yeah. I'll never forget the time Charlie, my son, and I were at Sears when they were over here at Manchester. There was a Sears. And we were in the pickup, what do you call it? Will call, that where you go if you buy a big appliance or something, you have to pick it up at the back of the store. And he and I were sitting on a bench right in the middle of this room. And on the left were a couple of ladies who were obviously liberal, non-Trumpers, if you will. Yes. And on to our right were two guys who were obviously mega guys.
Mm-hmm.
And those two were throwing things back and forth verbally, and it got pretty heated.
Is that right?
Oh, and Charlie and I are sitting there between them, and he was like very uncomfortable, and I was enjoying it, seeing these two go back. I'll tell you, it was something. I wish I could remember. I mean, there are some things said that I, to this day, I can't remember, but it was pretty amazing. But I could see something happening. What I was curious about is a few years ago, I remember the controversy over these guys that would stand outside polling places that were armed.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm trying to figure out is, what are they trying to accomplish? Because they don't know how you're voting. They don't know. It's secret. Yeah.
I think their goal is to keep you away. You know,
just don't even go in.
They were trying to keep you away from going in at all. That was my understanding of it, you know, was to like kind of incite fear, so that, and they did that especially in the Democratic regions, because they were afraidful. So they didn't want the Democrats to vote.
These are MAGA guys,
right?
It's before MAGA, maybe.
I think this was. I think they were what we call the Proud Boys. Something like that. So
yeah. That's a whole nother story. January.
So we had I don't know if you saw recently. So there was a church.
You're talking about the what do you call it?
I think it was a Lutheran church, and they did a drag queen story time.
The story thing.
Yeah, with their parents. It was a family event, and the guys called and said, you know, if you do this, we'll, you know, there'll be consequences. And yeah, they left all the stained glass, but they broke out all the windows. Oh, and then they left a, like a calling card on the lawn show, saying, you know, Proud Boys were here or something like that.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were worried about that one. I know the cops are on it. We're trying to keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, it's too bad. I mean, that's,
yeah,
it's scary. Well, you know, on another, oh, we got 9 minutes left. Five minutes. Oh, we haven't begun to go through our list here.
Oh, all right. Wherever it took us, sorry.
Can't believe me. Was there something you want to talk about that we haven't yet?
Can I ask a clarifying question?
What's that?
Oh, sorry. I was just wondering if that Lutheran church was in your area. I didn't catch that.
I don't know where it's in Fresno. Yes, it's in Fresno. Oh,
yeah, wow. No, it's like it's a mile from my house.
Wow.
I think it's the one on Palm Avenue, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm in the Tower, Fresno High area.
Yeah, it's in the Tower. Yeah.
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 So, what are you most proud of in the past year? What am I proud of? Or is that what you mean?
What are you most proud of this past year? Is the question at the bottom.
Probably that I quit drinking.
Okay.
You know, that's probably the most proud.
Okay.
I didn't think I could do it. I still can't believe I did.
You know, I quit for very similar reasons that you did, only I had to do it a few years ago because, you know, we were talking about, you know, drinking and that really impacted my stomach and my liver and my blood pressure. And it was just, I was with you. I had to just flat out quit. You know? I gotta say, I don't really miss it too much. I mean,
I do. Like I said, when I watch Blue Bloods and they have that great scotch in that fire.
Yeah.
The fireplace and the paneling and the rich leather and
yeah. This is when I'm out with my friends to dinner and they're having wine and whatnot. You know?
That's hard too. Yeah, you're right.
And I know that they want me to drink with them, and I'm like going, it just is not worth the pain in my belly to, you know, to have that. So
I forgot about the heartburn part of it.
Yeah. That's what got me. So
yeah. Well, good for us, huh?
Good for us. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for us. Okay, let's see if we left anything out here.
What's something that will take that you will take with you from this experience, Mikey?
Boy.
This is the concluding question that Claire is posed to.
Well, probably to do this again.
Yeah.
And if you're interested, I'd love to have coffee with you.
Okay, sure.
If you want to get together, because I think we have a lot in common, more than we think.
Probably, yeah.
And given both our healthcare related kind of mine through marketing, you through, you know, serving and so forth. And you left your religion. Well, you didn't. Well, you're still a Christian.
Oh, I did. I left. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I never. Well, I left mine, too, come to think of it.
Yeah.
We're both in that same boat. So we have a lot more in common than we don't. And let's grab some coffee.
Okay. Sounds great.
Okay, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Mikey. This has been a good time.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
I'll get your contact info and you'll get mine.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, buddy. Okay, Claire.